Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Who doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie. And fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Well, in the first half, we'll take a couple of listeners' calls, but we'll get into March Madness Madness, our second round, and it is powerful stuff, so look forward to that.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Tom Papa. With Bald Brian on sound effects, Mike Dawson filling in on news, and another round of March Madness Madness. And now, a man who's never exhibited white silence, or any silence for that matter, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Gina Grad's still out. She'll be back, I think, in a day or two. So, good day, Bald Brian.
The Adam Carolla Show. What's that?
Ugh. I heard that for the entire flight.
Shrill.
All right. I got stuff to get into. Tom Papa's going to join us. Always enjoy me some Tom Papa. Jam in the Van, Speakeasy. That'll be this Thursday on the 25th. We'll be doing stand-up. Adam Ray's going to do stand-up. Dawson's doing stand-up. And Max Apata, his band, Maxi, is going to be playing as well.
Maxi.
I have a...
They're doing Jim Dandy the Rescue.
I have a very funny Tom Papa clip to play for you guys. It's a famous bit of his that I really enjoy, and it just struck me. I heard it on the radio, I've got a couple of years ago, but I told Max Pata to find that clip. We all got tested here for COVID because we just were filming this Netflix thing that has... it's a car thing. Going doing a car race. It's not my production, but I'll tell you guys more about that as we get closer to it. But everyone got tested. I think everyone's good as far as I can tell. I haven't heard anything.
Rapid test, I have to assume. How long did the results take to get back?
I don't know, because I went in and did a pod and then I immediately left. So I have no idea how it turned out. But I'm guessing someone would have got hold of me if, in fact, we got the nose swab. Everyone complains about that one, but not so bad. I don't know. Maybe they're not going deep. I don't know.
It's one of those things like you'd know when you see it. Did it go up like past the nose, past the sinus into your brain, or did it just swab around the nose?
It got.
It is a dramatic. Having had both, it is a dramatic difference.
I think it's the lesser one because it was a little irritating, but it wasn't devastating.
Feels like it got a couple knuckles deep. But not all the way. After it was done, I said that was slightly uncomfortable.
Yes.
Just slightly.
But kind of makes me think, and it's one of those things. You know, the thing about the nose is there's not much of a science to it. The nurse goes up in there, and then she kind of stops where she thinks it's good, you know? Yeah. And I would argue...
There's no ding.
I'd argue you could probably put a little stripe on the swab and say this is where it's going to, and it would vary from schnoz to schnoz, but
of course
you'd at least know it wasn't going past that line, which would give you a sort of the psychology of it is you don't know when she's going to stop, and that's the part that makes it so
absolutely
uncomfortable. But everyone got that, so everyone checked out.
I read a very lengthy and thorough and interesting New Yorker article over the weekend that was basically as much of a postmortem as we can get on COVID at this point. Like, I'm sure, you know, there'll be more to the tale as years go on, but it was, how did it get out of control? How did it get to where, or at least where it got to, et cetera, et cetera. And it, of course, as you can imagine, it's complicated, but one of the main issues was the lack of testing and the lack of rapid testing, especially early on. Think about how quickly we could have thrown a fire blanket over the whole thing if we had known, like, oh, this person, we took your test and 5 minutes later, find out that you have COVID. No, you can't be admitted to this restaurant or sporting event or whatever it is. It's unfortunately one of the things that, you know, spread the fire.
Well, the problem, you know, with the testing, as we've talked about, is Drew, who got hit hard, was negative for his first three tests, I think, you know.
Yeah.
So he
multi-testing too.
He got it. It didn't present for a number of days. So I think he was tested at least twice, but maybe three times negative before.
How many times?
Three times, fool. Before it was positive. So even in that situation, yeah. I don't know. I mean, look, it couldn't hurt. I don't really, you know, when it comes to tests and vaccines and stuff like that, everything is such short notice. It's such a tall order. I can't even believe we live in a society that can produce stuff this fast. I don't, I'm not really,
Indeed.
I kind of, you know, I'm philosophical about it, which is these guys had 10 minutes to put together a test and 20 minutes to put together a vaccine. Mm-hmm. And they did it. You know, it wasn't executed perfectly. And there's definitely room for improvement. But I don't know. We live in a society where a vaccine should take 3 years and we got it in 7 months or whatever it is. I'll say I'm glad. I'm not going to find a lot of fault in the folks that did that.
Agreed. Well, when the tale's told a year from now, you know, when it's etched in stone, I think the incredible speed with the what I've been reading, the incredible speed which the vaccine has been made and produced and distributed is going to be what, you know, prevented from coming a full, you know, global catastrophe.
All right. We have the I want to play that Tom Papa Just for Laughs festival from 2010. It just made me laugh. And then you guys will go, oh, that Tom Papa.
The first time I saw my wife, I wasn't thinking, oh, she has good birthing hips. Let me mount that. No, I was just thinking, new sex. Yay. It's a powerful moment, isn't it? You see her. She sees you. There's that attraction. You convince her that you're not a rapist. That's a special night. She brings you back to her home and her room for the first time. A girl's room, is there anything more heavenly on earth? It's like a genie bottle in there. Pillows everywhere. You rub in the right spot. All your wishes come true. And you'll work the rooms, different little touches, little tapestries on the dresser, little beads on the bedpost, weird bottles up on the shelves filled with nothing. It's like a magic castle. But then you get married and then you realize it's your room too. It's not cool. There's no mystery left. Then you realize she has all those empty bottles up there because she's lazy. And you don't have sex as often. It's still good, but not as often. You have a lot of free time. You got to fill in with a lot of yapping, a lot of yap, 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 yapping. Then you reach that point where you're like, I love you. I really do. But if you tell me that story about you in high school one more time, I'm going to bury you in the yard. And this is where the whole system kicks in. This is why you end up with kids. You need new material. You need someone else to talk to. And then you create the worst roommates on the planet. Horrible people to live with. Horrible. You ever open up a pack of M&Ms around little kids? They come at you like goats in a petting zoo. No hands, just heads. Nah, nah. And that's what brings you back together. You're like, I hate them. I hate them too. Mine are getting better. I'm starting to like them. I didn't like them for years. They were awful. That whole baby stage is just annoying. They just, they're little meatballs. You can't talk to them. It's just aggravating, isn't it? Yeah, we didn't eat in restaurants for 5 years because they don't want to eat in restaurants. And I thought, well, I'm the adult. I can tell them we're staying in a restaurant. No, that's not how it goes. They just stare at you. I want to leave. Well, your food's not here yet, honey. Well, I want to leave. And you're going to want to leave, too. Ah! Not ready? Oh, think about it. I'm going to do it to this table. Ah!
The great Tom Papa. Yeah, that bit's like 10 minutes long, but it's really funny. So you guys should, well, we'll talk to him about that as well. He was also the host, I think, for the marriage ref that I did with Trump all those years ago.
The highest rated episode you
watched. That's right. You watch. So we will talk about that as well. So there was this thing going around, which was Biden slipped a couple of times on the stairs going up to Air Force One. And people were making fun of him and wondering if he was losing it and so on and so forth. And it was one of these things where I realized the excuse for the slip was actually worse than the slip. The slip, to me, is I think Air Force One has carpeted stairs going up to it. I don't know what their non-skid thing is, but
plus the dress shoes.
Yeah, I was going to say there's nothing worse than loafers that haven't been fully broken in. And these guys, first off, they should be wearing girls' volleyball shoes or wrestling shoes or something, something with some rubber on the sole, not the shiny leather on the sole. But Biden tried to make a trot up the stairs, and then Biden slipped a couple of times. And I think we can look at it. It looks like it's carpeted, right? It's got like a red carpet.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you can see where it ends on the end of the steps.
Yeah,
the sides, I mean.
So he started to kind of hustle it up because I think he was trying to show a little vim and a little vigor. Oh, we got a little problem with our internet, Max Spada.
I've seen the clip. I know what you're talking about. He goes out of his way for obvious reasons, especially in the election, like election season, to show like how virile he is. But
right.
At the same time, I don't know how old he is. 78.
Yeah. All right.
Well, push it.
Brian's internet's breaking up a little, or our internet's breaking up a little, but I'll talk for a second. See if we get our signal a little stronger. But the thing about it is all right, he's 78-year-old guy. He tried to go at a fast pace up some stairs. The stairs are carpeted and he's wearing a new set of loafers and, you know, shit happens. Could happen to anybody. No big deal. But the excuse that the Biden administration offered for the slip was, and Dawson has this, and this is the part I'm kind of interested in.
A White House spokeswoman said Friday that President Biden fell on the steps of Air Force One because, quote, it's pretty windy outside.
Right. So the problem is slipping on the stairs going up the, I mean, that's something a 19-year-old college football player could do. But if the wind knocks you over, that says frail to me. I mean, think about the excuse. By the way, there's an adage, like a good stiff wind would have knocked that guy over. Like, you know, they go, this guy was so unsteady on his feet, or this guy was so feeble or so old, a stiff breeze would have knocked him over. So I would have not addressed it at all. But if I did address it, I wouldn't have said the wind knocked him over. That is the most feeble sounding thing I could imagine, president being knocked over by wind gust. All right, Brian is rebooting here. I got a
I'm
couple
not
of
rebooting.
I got a we're rebooting Brian okay. Because our stupid internet. So again, we see this a lot where the excuse is actually worse than whatever took place. And wind,
what is the excuse in this case?
The wind knocked him over.
That's the only part I missed.
The wind knocked him over.
Yeah, again, he's, I don't know how old he is, 78, 80, whatever. It's like, yeah, well, this is kind of what we expect. Like, you can just be like, sorry, I'm old.
Right.
We elected an old guy. We know what comes with the package.
Right. But do not say, as an excuse, he was blown over by the wind.
Right.
Because that sounds scarecrow-y to me. That sounds
much worse.
Super feebly. To me. All right. Somebody's got a question about freeway signs. Another one's got one about racing. I want to get in some hot rye bread talk coming up, too, because I got thoughts. James from South Dakota. James?
Hey, gang. How's it going?
Hi, guy.
Hi, guy. So, yeah, I'd like to be a one-upper. I think South Dakota usually has their poop in a group, but this time I think we've topped California. We have signs that say think, or a sign that says why die whenever somebody dies via traffic accident. And so our state is littered with these black and white signs that just say think, and they're very condescending because they don't say, you know, hey, this person drove too fast, or hey, this person didn't look left and now they're dead. And so our state is just littered with these metal memorials that I think tops California in some ways.
Well, it's more existential than practical.
Yeah. Telling people to think is kind of like telling people to breathe. You know what I mean? When people go, you just got to breathe. Okay, no shit. I do it in my sleep. I do it when I'm drunk. I do it drunk
really
and in my
it.
Sleep.
Hardly ever.
If you want me to think about it, I'm going to fuck it up and die. So it's like thinking about not biting your tongue when you're eating something. It's
you're
always
doomed.
You're doomed to bite your tongue. California has been putting these. We're kind of done with the COVID signs I've seen out here. We're now in the 3,200 deaths
yes.
on the freeway sign. Always bums me out. I always think about the 3,000 souls that have been lost. But also, never affects my rate of speed. I do not change based on, I just look at those people as fools who didn't know how to handle their car.
Yeah, all the signs say like 3,255 traffic deaths this year. Watch your speed. And as you're sitting, maybe going 30 miles an hour in LA traffic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Watching my speed, whether I like it or not.
I'll bet you Tiger Woods looked up at one of those signs right before he went off the road. He was momentarily distracted. Yeah, we're looking at the think signs. Again, I could use a little more specific information other than the vague think. Oh, Max Zapata got a speeding ticket. What the?
Oh, man.
How fast were you going?
I was going 54 and a 35 down Riverside Drive.
That'll get you to the freeway.
It was a total speed trap. I messed up.
It's all speed trappy, man. That's how they get you.
He's on the motorcycle hiding behind the fence, and I saw him, and it was too late. You taught me a trick, Adam, about using my e-brake to kind of so my brake lights don't show, but I didn't think that fast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Use the e-brake because once you zip past the cop and he sees you stomp on the brakes, that's an admittance of guilt.
Admission of guilt.
Means you saw him and you're now braking. So you didn't use the e?
Oh, man, it was an awful morning. So my tire blows out. I'm late to work. I'm texting you like, hey, man, I'm going to be late. I had to get my tire repaired. I'm running. I'm heading to work as fast as I could.
Haven't you seen the signs? Don't text and drive.
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't. I texted him after I put the spare on and I took it to the tire shop. And I was working out of the tire shop for the first couple hours of the day. And then once it got it replaced, went to work, got the speeding ticket, tried to do the sappy story. About, oh, my tire just blew out. I was supposed to be at work three hours ago. But you know, he wasn't having it. And then and he's like, look, if you want to fight it, this isn't an admittance of guilt, but you can go to court on this day in June. And and I looked at him, I go, are you going to be there?
Chris, you know, I don't normally say this, but you got to play the Asian card.
I thought
at this particular time in the history of this country, there's no other time you can
look,
play
I
that
did,
Asian
I did
card.
Look at him in the eye and I went, I respect what you do. I appreciate everything you do.
Yeah, that's right. Sitting and around and fucking hiding.
I tried, but he just wasn't having it. And I asked him and I tried to slightly just go like, hey, are you going to be there? And he looked at me and goes, I'm always there.
The thing about it is,
I'd argue that we're having this conversation on the side of the road.
The irony is everything is always safety, safety, safety. You sitting on a motorcycle wedged in between two parked cars, seeing you zip by and then throwing some revs and zipping out there and catching up to you as fast as you possibly can on a motorcycle before you turn the corner. I would say that is the most dangerous aspect of what transpired.
He popped right out.
You driving at your speed, even if it's 20 miles an hour faster than the posted speed limit, is not nearly as dangerous as what he did to tell you what you were doing was dangerous.
The worst part was after the ticket, I'm driving back to work, and now I'm very cautious. Like, I'm trying to just go. I don't want to seem like a speeding car. And I'm driving, and I look down. I'm still going 50, and I'm still slower than all the other cars around me, and it just drove me nuts.
Well, as I always talk about, the street speed limit of 35 was probably set in 1952, and the highway speed of 55 came down from 65 and probably 72, and cars are safe, they're modern, they don't feel like they're moving. I mean, you used to really get a sensation of speed. If you guys can think about the cars you grew up in and the cars our parents had, I mean, those things would start shimmying at 40 yeah. miles an hour. The brakes were bad. I mean, wind was sort of whistling through those little side. We used to have those yes. weird little side flap windows.
Triangular, and you yes. used to pivot them to get wind in there.
Yeah, it's basically the reason they invented those is so that people could break into their own cars. That's really the only reason you need one of those side wings. When you would lock the keys in your car, you'd take the coat hanger, you'd wedge it through the weather stripping, the rubber, and you'd hook it on that little latch and pop it up, and then you could reach in and unlock the door. That's the only reason those wind wings were ever invented. But yeah. when you were going 70 miles an hour on the freeway in my mom's VW Squareback or Dodge Dart, you knew it, man. I mean, you could hear everything. You could smell gas. You could smell transmission and oil fluids. And now you get in the car, you shut. First off, just the sound. You just think about the sound. It is aerodynamic. It is sealed. It is Tupperware quiet inside of that car. Then you crank up your Sirius XM or your podcast or whatever it is you're listening to. And now you've eliminated one of the major sort of components of speed, which is hearing the engine, feeling the wind, hearing the wind. You don't hear anything. And now,
I remember you used to listen to the cars on the Bay Bridge go the other way because my window was down. It was just a whoosh, whoosh.
Right.
You really got a sense of how fucking fast you were going.
And now everything is aerodynamic. Everything works. The brakes are big. The car's quiet. And you're just buzzing along. I would bet you you're driving a Prius, right?
Yes, sir.
I think the electric car could even add to that lack of sensory.
The silent assassin.
Silent, yeah. It's so much easier just to speed along in that car. So the point is the 35 is antiquated. That's made for cars that are 70 years old now. And the 55 and the 65 are antiquated, too. So everyone just drives at a faster clip because it just feels safer. And they don't feel like they're experiencing the sensation of speed. All right. Let me talk to you guys about rye bread. I have specific thoughts about rye bread. I was craving deli food. I had a serious craving for deli food a few weeks ago. And there's no delis by where I live, but I found a place that said it had like deli sandwiches, and I thought, maybe I should go to Arts or Cantor's or something, but that's a long ways away. But this place, if it's good, then I've got my deli sandwich place, and it's nearby. So I got the, what was it, the Reuben, I think. Is that the pastrami?
Well, you can do a pastrami Reuben, or the Reuben is typically corned beef.
Oh, the corned beef.
I like the pastrami Reuben.
I think, is it typically corned beef? I thought it was typically pastrami.
Corned beef.
The Reuben is typically corned beef.
Yeah.
Huh.
You have to get the pastrami Reuben to get, obviously.
I feel like a lot of places, I think a lot of places have caught on because I feel like they just offer the pastrami Reuben just up front, which is what I got.
It's been about 10 or 12 years since I've ordered a Reuben, so maybe times have changed.
I'll tell you the deal. The deal breaker is the bread. The rye bread is too thick and it's too chewy. It's not deli style. My grandfather, the great Laszlo Gorog, he would go to Webby's Bakery on Ventura Boulevard, that a Jewish bakery. He would order rye in a loaf and he would tell them to cut it thin. And they would cut it thinly. And all the good Jewish delis go with the thin cut rye, mm-hmm. which means it's not all bread. It's not all chewy bread. And it gets a little bit moist from the sauerkraut or from the pastrami or whatever the Thousand Island that's on there. And
cheese.
And it works. The problem is when they get the thick, chewy stuff, the bread becomes dominant. My grandfather used to get that bread. He would thinly sliced rye. You could see light passing through it and he held it up. He would toast it. and he would butter it up, and it was a little bit crunchy and not chewy, and it was so goddamn good for a sandwich or breakfast. So I don't know what we're doing with the super fat-ass rye bread, but knock it the fuck off, everybody. Get the thin stuff.
Is that the field of the goyim? Because I feel like the Jewish delis have a corner of the market on Reubens, and they do the thinly sliced rye. Is it the non-Jews who are cutting it too thick?
It is the goyim who just decided that more's better and carbs are better and chewy's better than crisp. And like when you order
diminishing returns, my friend.
Absolutely, it's no different than pizza crust. Pizza crust is so much better when it's thin. When it goes south is when it gets thick and chewy. But kids like the thick and chewy stuff. And so dumb people like the chicken, the thick and chewy bread. But it's no bueno. So knock it off. And there's nothing worse than when you order rye toast. Like if you have breakfast and you order the rye toast. I have my grandfather's rye toast in my head. But what shows up is this sponge that's 7/8 of an inch thick, and it's just a big chew fest.
To blame for this? Sadly, through no fault of their own, I love it. Italian delis, because all their bread is thick, whether it's Dutch crunch or the French roll or the focaccia, whatever roll you're using, thicker is better with the Italians. But I don't think that translates to Reubens, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, the same rules apply that apply to pizza. And that apply to going to the beach. I say it all the time. Either be on the beach where it's dry and safe or be out beyond the breakwater where it's nice and calm. Don't be in the middle. Either get yourself a nice hoagie or grinder or Philly cheesesteak or with the big old hoagie bun on there. Or go to the Jewish deli and get the thin. The medium size in between, that's our downfall, people. All right, one last question, and then we'll get on with our lives here. Frank from Cleveland. Frank?
Hi, Guy.
Hi, Guy.
Ace, big fan of your motorsports career or hobby or however you want to consider it. I've always wondered if you ever looked or partake in or participated in any of the smaller regional stuff like SCCA autocross or rallycross or anything like that?
I did a rallycross an autocross thing once at Lime Rock, but it was just because I was forced into the car by the guys who own the track and made to go around these cones after the longest day of my life.
You sound like who, Jeremy or Jason London? Is like, they took me and forced me to take drugs.
Yeah. Oh, in Palm Springs?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. I'm in a BMW M3. It was, I got up that morning in New York City. It's the day where Matt Fondalier almost died. I got up about 6 a.m.
Long time ago.
That's right. I got up about 6. I did Howard Stern, in the city. Got out of there about 8:30 in the morning or something. Jumped into a rental car. Drove to Connecticut with the crew. We were going to film the Newman doc. Got to Lime Rock. I was going off of 3-4 hours sleep. The day was going to end with a 9 p.m. flight out of JFK. It was just the longest day in the world. It started with Stern at 6:30 in the morning and was going to end with a 9:30 p.m. flight out of JFK. And we were going to be hustling the entire time to make it from New York to Connecticut to the track at Lime Rock to Bob Sharp's house. We were going to interview him and then off to the airport. And at some point when I was at Lime Rock, I said, all right, we filmed what we need to film here. Now let's pack it up and get to Bob Sharp's house before we miss our flight. And the guys at the track said, you got to do the rally cross here, or you got to do the autocross. And I was like, ugh, I love driving cars. I'm so goddamn tired. And they just forced me to do it. So I just did it. And then they made fun of me. They were like, oh, he hit a cone. I'm like, yes, I hit a cone. Yeah. I'm fucking sleep deprived. I've never been on this before. I don't know what direction to turn when I get to the end of this straightaway. Yes, I hit a cone. That's how it works.
Broadcasting with Howard Stern 11 hours ago.
Right. And they had a guy who is a professional driver who just does that autocross course. It's like a big parking lot with a bunch of cones put up everywhere. So you have to kind of learn it. I didn't learn it. And then they were like, oh, look at you. You hit a cone and our professional driver beat you. And I was like, yes, that makes sense. He drives this all the time. I never drive it. And I'm falling asleep behind the wheel. They say that being up 18 hours is equal to 0.05 blood alcohol content. And 24 hours is like a, sorry, point one. Yeah, you start to lose it when you've been deprived. And like I said, Fondalier, who was probably with me the whole trip, literally almost died at Bob Sharp's house. He had too many stairs, too much equipment. Oh, he wore Biden's loafers, essentially. Like he was not wearing the right shoes. And no, about the third trip up the stairs, I just looked at his face and it was like red and white at the same time. Like it had no blood in it and all the blood in it. And that's when I told Matt to sit down, but only after he got the next camera rig back up to the top stairs. All right, Tom Papa's going to join us, and then we also got March Madness Madness as well. All right, we need to take ourselves a little break, and when we come back, we'll do our next installment of March Madness Madness.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hi, guy. I got another bygone trope for you. How about the one where the nerd loses their glasses? They're crawling around on all fours, proclaiming aloud that they've lost their glasses and they can't find them. And then you hear a crunch. Keep it going, baby.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Well, Dawson's going to lead the March Madness Madness. Is line three from Australia still up?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to him before we jump into this. Michael, 35, Australia? Oh, no, he's not up. All right. Well, anyway, if he pops back up, we'll talk to him. Dawson, you ready for our next round?
Welcome back to the Big Rants as we blow through the brackets in March Madness Madness. Yesterday, Elizabeth Warren advanced over AOC in the Big Government Conference, and Ellen danced her way out of the tournament as DJ Khaled moved ahead to another one in the Pop Culture Conference. And in the California Conference, LA's homeless population whacked freeway weeds and trash. So let's pit another six of 32 first-round competitors against each other to see which piss Adam off the most. Our next matchup from the Classics Conference, Campus Safe Spaces, going up against Waiters and Tipping.
All right, well, in that order, Campus Safe Spaces. Well, we all made fun of these Campus Safe Spaces, so if somebody was coming into town who had ideas that you didn't share, but you couldn't defend your own ideas through conversations and an intellectual debate, some monster like Jordan Peterson was rolling in or Ben Shapiro, we had to create a little safe space for you. We put your crayons and your Huggy Bookies in there and your stuffies, and you would go there and stroke a stuffy while Jordan Peterson was talking about evolution or evolutionary biology or whatever the hell he was talking about, which is something that he probably took straight from a textbook. But you're in college, so why would you be interested in new ideas or different ideas? And who decided, by the way, that you should go to college and only have your own ideas echoed back at you? Isn't that sort of the opposite of college? I thought you were supposed to go to college to learn shit you didn't know. I mean, you go to college and you take a biology class or you take a French class, and it's not because you're a biologist, and it's not because you're Parisian. It's because you don't know anything. You don't know anything about French, and you don't know anything about biology, but good. You can go to a place and sit and listen to a guy who's older than you, who does know a lot of shit about either biology or speaking French, and then you too could learn more. But somehow the decree went down with the snowflakes and the folks that have been weaned on the teat of the self-esteem movement, that other people with their ideas were scary and threatened your safety. Not sure how intellectuals with large vocabularies and a penchant for speaking in public threaten your safety, but of course you feel threatened. And the reason you feel threatened is because your ideas are for shit and you can't defend your ideas intellectually. So you go somewhere and you stroke a panda bear so you feel better. This is just what we need for when the next war breaks out, right? A bunch of college guys who would be officers if we actually had a draft, and then you could bring your fucking Huggy Bookie and your panda bear and your fucking dry erase board and draw unicorns and butterflies and rainbows. But we decided to create a space, which was fine. Now, here's the thing. The safe space would be fine if we just cracked the door and threw a Molotov cocktail in it and then fucking welded the door shut. That would be problem solved. But you assholes are getting out of your safe space and you're now entering populations. And now what was your safe space with your fucking safety retarded ideas have now become society. Your safe space has become everyone's actual space. And now you're going out to the New York Times and you're going to CNN and you're going to all the major Fortune 500 companies and you're taking your fucking weak ass brain with all your horrible ideas who can't tolerate ideas that are different than your own, and you're polluting everyone's space. So the fucking safe space, the fart in the safe space got out of the safe space and now it's stunk up society.
At the post.
Yeah. Well, that was good. Wait, what was the next one?
Waiters and tipping.
Waiters and tipping. Now, look, the first things first. This notion of you get to run a business but not pay employees, and that's the conceit, you know? You can go to a restaurant. You can go to a restaurant and spend $80 on a bottle of wine. You can go to the French Laundry and spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a meal, as our own Gavin Newsom did, and Bald Brian attempted a few times as well. I don't get it. When I went to the Waffle House, the poor, put upon, thrice divorced, middle aged chick who probably had her ovaries and uterus removed earlier that week, she was slinging the hash. She was bringing the plates over, but because you tipped 20% and the bill only came to $26, she got herself like $4 worth of tip. I don't get what's going on. And I don't mind that person getting paid, and I don't mind that person getting tips. My problem comes in the super expensive restaurants because it's based on percentage. Are the plates at the French Laundry heavier than the ones at the Waffle House? I don't think so. Is there any discernible difference other than I get a shitload more money? So the person that works with Christy and Bald Brian over there, you want to tip 20% on that meal, you're going to be tipping $185. That person got $185 for 2 hours work. By the way, ophthalmologists and orthodontists don't make that kind of hourly fucking wage. Mark Garagus's billable hours are probably what the French Laundry waitress or waiter makes. And why doesn't the fucking restaurant pay them? I feel the same way with the massage. The massage is like you're going to Burke Williams. It's $180 for a 50-minute deep tissue massage. And then you go, well, you got a tip on top of that. We're just going to add 20, 25% on top of that. How about Burke fucking Williams pays the person with the GED and 2 months training out of the $180 I just gave Burke Williams? What other job works this way? Doesn't work that way. When you went to the tire warehouse, Maxipata, and they charge you $150 to mount and balance your tire, then did you have to go pay the tire tech separately because the guy behind the counter went, we We don't pay people who work here. That's up to you. So here's the conceit. You pay us for the food, you pay us for the massage, and then when we're done, you pay the guy who brought the food and mounted the tire separately. What a fucking ruse. It doesn't work that way at Home Depot. It doesn't work that way at the tire mounting place. It only works that way at fucking restaurants. And no, I don't need the hot 26-year-old who's dating the producer to walk out with $700 in cash every fucking night. And the person I'd really like to have that money is the put-upon middle-aged chick at the Waffle Hut. But she walks out with $37, blisters on her feet, and herpes.
Tough night.
Tough night. Next
that
up.
Was pretty,
hold on, we got to pick a winner.
That was pretty close to call. I need some help from the back, from the guys in the back. What do you think? I give the slight edge to tipping, but what do you think?
I'm feeling campus safe spaces because you brought a whole new wrinkle into it this time. The safe space is no longer a safe space. It's the world is their safe space.
They've been released.
That's new. I like
yes,
that.
Yes, they infected the world.
I was thinking it was going to be safe space before and after your original rant, but after hearing the waiters and tipping, when I lean towards waiters and tipping.
Well, Brian, we got a split in the room, which is no help to you. And sometimes
I'll break the tie and lean towards tipping because that was an inspired performance. I think it was a first round upset. This is like a 7-10 upset.
All right. Second round.
Next up from our big government conference, Maxine Waters versus Dr. Fauci.
Well, Maxine Waters. I met Maxine Waters 20 years ago doing Politically Incorrect. Approached her backstage. I talked to her about something that was on my mind and Dr. Drew's mind from doing Loveline for as long as we were doing it. The morning after pill. I thought this could save us a lot of unwanted young babies being born and being abandoned by fathers and families. And put a dent in the abortion business and would be an overall win-win. So I went to Maxine Waters and I said, I don't know if you know about this and I don't know if you're talking about this, but there's something called the morning after pill. And I think it'd be something for you to get behind. And she looked at me and she said, the science is still out on it. By the way, Maxine Waters doesn't know anything. Well, she's probably an expert in wigs. But other than wigs, I do not know she has a field of expertise. And I love how fucking shitty and dismissive politicians are. Like, no. First off, as if I know nothing. I sit next to Dr. Drew every night and we discuss this in detail. So she dismissed me because why take a good idea? You're only a politician. What good would this do for you? And by the way, you've come here to get some airtime with Bill Maher, not be pestered by what could be a good policy for you and your constituency. So she just brushed me off. But when I looked at her, I looked into the eyes of a crazy woman. I realized this woman is insane. It's funny. I labeled her at the time. 21 years ago, I called her Aunt Esther because Aunt Esther was the crazy fucking aunt from Sanford and Son. She was mean as shit and she was crazy as a fucking bat in a belfry. And I said Maxine Waters is that person. I've heard her speak many times since. I've never heard her string together a sentence that made sense. She's the one that's constantly talking about unity and working together. But as soon as she gets a fucking microphone, she's screaming at the crowd to go up and find people and confront them and push back and get in their faces. Thanks for the unity, bitch. Dr. Fauci. Dr. Fauci. I was agnostic on Fauci. He's a likable guy. He's a little impish. He likes to jog. He's in good shape for an 80-year-old. I think we all see old guys with a 9% body fat and go, that guy's doing something right. I mean, he's not getting high on his own supply. But at a certain point, he started getting drunk on his own spunk. That's right, because he realized I'm a fucking star now. I get to go on Newsweek and I get to go on Rolling Stones and everybody loves me. Fauci, everyone doesn't love you. Everyone hates Trump. And in the era of Trump, all we did was pick a side. We go, if Trump says hydroxychloroquine is good, then we'll say it's bad. if he doesn't like Fauci, then we will love Fauci. But that doesn't mean Fauci's good. That just means he doesn't like Trump and Trump doesn't like him. But all the media got in line and we all got right behind Fauci. And now Fauci's given us pearls of wisdom like even after you're vaccinated, you should still double mask. Really? Then what the fuck good is a vaccination if we all have to fucking mask up? And you can get vaccinated and you can be around other people that are vaccinated, but you can't be unvaccinated. Yeah, no shit. Once you're vaccinated, you're fucking vaccinated. We can get back to life. And I know you got a lot of sunshine blown up your ass by CNN and all the people that want to keep the fucking porn panic train rolling. And then you became a mouthpiece for those people. And then you started walking back policies like teachers can go back to school because it's fucking safe to go back to school once the protocols are in. That's right, because your friends in the news media did not like some of the things you were saying. And then you jumped the shark when someone asked you about gatherings, and you said no gatherings are good, no churches, no ball games, no sporting events, no schools. How about Black Lives Matter rally? Well, I can't really weigh in on that. You can't weigh in on gatherings? You just weighed in on gatherings. You said no gathering. And guess what a Black Lives Matter rally is? It's a fucking gathering. So, get consistent, get on the same fucking page, or how about you go out for a fucking jog and never come back?
Wow. Much closer than I anticipated. I thought this was going to be a mismatch. Maxine was going to dunk all over Fauci. I need Dawson and Max Patton to weigh in again.
I think the win goes to Maxine Waters. There was a little bit more fire in your voice. You started Dr. Fauci saying he was likable.
Yeah.
None of that with Maxine. Mm.
True. Dawson.
Yeah, this is a tough one. They're both compelling rants.
Well, that means I'm doing my job.
Yeah.
Because if it's a quick and easy decision, then I'm not doing my job.
So I guess I'm going to have to base this on more new material. I got to go with Fauci. It's fresher.
Fresher with Fauci. All right. Well, Brian, and again, we split the room.
These are really good. I'm going to go with Fauci, the upset, the first round upset over the number one seed, Maxine Waters.
All
right. Fauci moves on.
And finally, a round from our pop culture conference. It's Little Miss Sunshine versus Prince.
Wow. Little Miss Sunshine, the movie that single-handedly destroyed our society. That is right. Oh, hey, Adam, what's with the hyperbole? No hyperbole, bitch. This fucking one movie was the movie. It's the demarcation. It's the moment we jumped the shark as a nation in anticipation of obliteration of the family unit. Oh, yeah, we got all the characters there. We got Greg Kinnear. Greg Kinnear is the dad, but he's a dad from a nuclear family. And we don't like the nuclear families. We want the new family where everyone is gay and everyone else is transitioning and the rest of us have tried to commit suicide or took a vow of silence. So Kinnear, playing the father, trying to exalt certain virtues like work hard and stick to it and hustle, trying to earn money for his family. No. He's the bad guy. And the rest of the family wants to talk about the gay uncle who tried to commit suicide because he's the second leading author in Proust, I think. I've seen this movie way too fucking many times. Either way, we all cheered the misfit flunkies in this fucking movie. We had the guy who wanted to be the naval aviator. We had the young kid who wanted to be the fighter jet pilot, except for he took a vow of silence and had no upper body strength. Other than that, he's just what the Navy's looking for in terms of guys who fly F-18 Hornets. And then what about the grandpa? The junkie grandpa. The junkie, by the way, that fucking guy would have been Me Too'd into the next decade by now. Because all he did was physically come on sexually to all the other residents of Shady Acres. So, this guy gets thrown out of Shady Acres for slamming heroin. He's slamming heroin on the road in the bathroom while his fucking whore daughter, the 9-year-old, is shaking her fucking moneymaker. And he's getting her to dance like a trollop. This is some of the worst human beings on the goddamn planet, but they're all made out to be heroes. And don't get me started on the motorcycle cop who pulled him over and found the Jugs magazine. That was an embarrassing scene. This movie was the beginning of the end of Western civilization. Prince. Well, now, Prince. I'll start off like I started off with Fauci. The man could swing an axe. The man, now, he couldn't swing an actual axe, because if Prince actually picked up an actual axe and threw it over his shoulder, he would land on his ass, because he was a fucking waif model. But he could play the guitar. Everyone loves Prince. My problem with Prince isn't Prince. My problem is how much everyone fucking loves Prince. Yes, he could play the guitar. Yes, he was a great performer. Were his songs good? Not the fucking hits. Go back and listen to that 80s shit. All songs about him getting laid and fucking dry humping an amp and trying to get everyone's pussy wet. By the way, one of the biggest narcissists on the planet. You know you're a narcissist when you're being identified as a fucking symbol, and then you get a guitar made in the shape of the fucking symbol. The real hero in this equation is the guy who operated the bandsaw to make Prince's symbol guitar. That guy is a journeyman and a fucking warrior. Prince's songs, all about getting laid, all in the 80s, they do not date well. Oh, they date well in your feeble brain because you were 19 and you were getting your dick sucked for the first time. But go back and listen to some of those fucking Prince songs. They suck. No one has the guts to say it. I'm a hero.
What do you think, Brian?
I mean, as great as the Prince rant was, I think Little Miss Sunshine jumped out to a big lead and never looked back. The domination of the nation. What was the alliteration? It was so great.
I have no idea. Thank
we're
you.
We're
going to
play that back.
I was just free-forming it.
I think Little Miss Sunshine mopped up on that one.
I'm with you.
I'm with you.
All right.
All right. Find the full bracket at AdamCarolla.com and tune in tomorrow. For more of the Big Rants, it's March Madness, Madness.
Well, Tom Papa is ready to go, so we'll talk to him in a second.